Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated in the studios of KAKM.
I'm Grace Jang in for Michael Carey. Thanks for joining us for this week's edition of Alaska Edition. Our guests today are Tim Bradner, Natural Resources Reporter for Alaska Journal of Commerce, and Brendan Kelly Hellenthal, newly appointed Web and Social Media Editor for KTVA CBS 11 News, which I'm from. So the major topics this week, weather, wacky, wacky weather, has Alaskans wondering whether we've got enough natural gas to sustain us. And the other big topic is U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder is coming under fire for the Justice Department's role or alleged role in the Bill Allen sex abuse of minor investigations and the House Ethics Committee's investigation of Congressman Don Young. So let's begin with weather, since this cold snap has really had people talking and now we're getting a warm up. So Tim, Escapeda reported a major discovery, and some have said that it's going to be a game changer. Can you, for those of us who aren't familiar with the issue, can you start off by giving us some background? Who is Escapeda? What is the discovery, and is it a game changer?
Grace, Escapeda is a small independent company from Texas, and they came up here. They did kind of a gutsy thing. They brought a jackup rig to Cook Inlet, which is a mobile floating drill rig that you float out on the drill site, and you lower these steel legs, and the thing literally jacks itself up off the water surface. But there had not been a jackup rig here for many years, and there's a lot of good prospects for natural gas out in the middle of the inlet where it's too deep to drill from shore. So the idea was to bring a rig like that up here. It took a lot of doing, a lot of money. They had a little issue with the Jones Act, where they had, turned their thumbs up at the Jones Act and brought their rig up here. They'll have to pay a fine for that. They argue they did not technically violate the law because they stopped in Vancouver, B.C. on the way up. But in any event,
Act, just to rewind, has to do with...
Oh, the Jones Act is a old federal law from 1920 that requires cargoes shipped from one U.S. port to another port to be in an American bottom, American-built ship. And the problem that creates is that ships can carry big, really big cargoes like a jackup rig. There are no American bottoms. There has to be a foreign ship. Alaskans have always had a lot of issues with the Jones Act because it requires us to ship cargoes from our ports to the U.S. and vice versa in American-built ships, which are more expensive. So we don't like the Jones Act. So we sort of... cheer on people like Escapeda who thumb their noses at the feds and come up here anyway. But to bring it around, they did discover gas. They don't know how much it is. It could be a game changer. It could be a lot of gas. It may not be, but people feel pretty confident that at least there's something there. And there's other companies that have found oil and gas recently in Cook Inlet too. And it could be a game changer in the sense that for many years, we've heard that we've got a pending shortage of natural gas in Cook Inlet, and because our big gas fields are running down. But in the last year, three discoveries in Cook Inlet could turn things around. We could be back where we have a surplus again. And that's good news for consumers.
That is good news. And there were two different projects being bandied about. One was a direct line, and one was supposed to be tapping into Asian markets. Can you tell us what the Escapeda discovery has on those two projects?
Well, there is the Escapeda gas would most likely be used in domestic markets. They would sell locally to the utilities, and if there's a surplus, they may have to be creative and try to sell into an export market. The problem is that ConocoPhillips, which operates a natural gas liquefaction plant in Kenai that chills the gas and makes a liquid out of it that you can ship in a tanker, is closing down. So that might foreclose a market for Escapeda or other companies that are drilling for gas and finding gas. Separately, there's also talk about maybe the large LNG project with North Slope Gas, which would be built possibly in Valdez, becoming much more viable as an alternative for shipping our North Slope Gas rather than the pipeline to Canada. A lot of gas being found in the lower 48. So the gas pipeline along the Alaska Highway to Alberta, which has been worked on by TransCanada and Exxon, some people say doesn't look very good anymore. And the governor is now talking about taking another look at Valdez and a large LNG project.
Well, speaking of the governor, and while we're still on the topic of oil and gas, can you talk about what is expected to be discussed in this upcoming session? It promises to be fireworks.
Well, this session, I think like last session, will be heavily dominated by the governor's oil tax proposal, House Bill 110. And to sort of take it at a 100,000-foot level, the governor is proposing to change the state's oil production tax because there's evidence he feels, and other people feel it's not justified, that the state's high tax rate is discouraging new investment in our oil fields up north. Oil production is declining rapidly. Trans-Alaska pipeline oil moving through it is declining rapidly, and there are concerns about the pipeline, whether it can operate at such low oil volumes and things like that. So the governor wants more investment, and he feels that an adjustment to the taxes is rated, and other people disagree with that. A lot of fireworks over last session. I think it's going to continue all during this session. And unfortunately, I think it's going to be such a dominant issue that it will literally suck the oxygen out of the Capitol building, and not much else is going to get done. So there'll be, obviously, a lot of other bills will be on the table, and a lot of bills will be passed, but I think legislators just aren't going to have a lot of energy left, so to speak, for other issues once this thing is dealt with, however it's dealt with.
And you've been covering legislature for a while, so you know exactly about what you're speaking.
I have seen more oil tax bills than I'd like to think about in judo, unfortunately.
Okay. So moving on, Brendan, is there anything you'd like to add about oil and gas?
No, he's the pro on that.
Okay. So I recently went on a trip to Shugnak near Kotzebue and witnessed firsthand what rural Alaskans have to go through just to heat their homes and just to do minor things like toast their bread and make a caribou stew. The average home in Shugnak pays $700 a month for electricity. So any idea whether, I know we're talking about coke inlet gas, but any idea whether we're going to be facing any kind of prospects for alleviating that burden that rural Alaskans have?
Grace, that's a very difficult problem in rural Alaska. The difficulty is there's just very small communities, isolated. They now depend largely on diesel to generate electricity. They use stove oil, which is like diesel, slightly different kind of oil, to heat their homes. And unfortunately, there's no easy way to get the oil there. They have to ship it up by barges. Some villages in that area, in that region, Noatak, for example, barges can't reach anymore.
Right, the river's dried up.
Right, they have to fly it in, which is very expensive. And there's no easy answer to it. Some communities in that area have the benefit of wind, good wind regimes, and so they have wind towers. Alaska Village Electric Cooperative has wind systems in a few of the villages that they operate up there. That has had some benefits in reducing the amount of diesel that's burned for oil, lowered the price somewhat, but it's just a very difficult situation. And it's just logistics, it's the cost of shipping oil, not just to Kotzebue, but the oil has to be lightered ashore because there's no dock there at Kotzebue, and then it has to be transloaded and shipped up the river into small barges. And so all that multiple handling in small quantities to a small village is what results in that. And there's not really a lot anybody can do about it unless they come up with something like maybe a small nuclear plant, something like that.
You've been here since the 60s. Has it always been that difficult?
Yeah, it has. It's been exacerbated in recent times, though, because the price of oil is so high. We have $100 a barrel oil prices, and that's great for us who, you know, benefit from state revenues and public services and the permanent fund dividend and all those things. But for people in small communities in rural Alaska, I mean, they are really hammered. And Fairbanks, by the way. Fairbanks people depend on oil for heating, space heating, and they have to pay. It's become a huge economic issue for the community. And some people in Fairbanks have to pay more for their oil bill than is their house mortgage. I mean, it's terrible.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and it's there's no easy answer to that either. In Fairbanks, the answer is probably if a natural gas pipeline is built, and that will lower the cost and also clean up air pollution issues that they have because of the burning of wood stoves and things like that. But rural Alaska, it's a tough set of facts. And the only thing that could alleviate it would be some form of a state-supported subsidy or something, like we do to a limited extent with electric rates in rural communities. And some people have said we should do it with oil heating also. You know, that might be a solution for them, but then that gets very political.
Okay. Well, let's bring Brendan into this conversation. So U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder, his feet are kind of being held to the fire by Senator Lisa Murkowski with the DOJ Department of Justice's role or alleged role in the APD, Anchorage Police Department, investigation of Bill Allen and those sexual abuse of minor charges. Can you talk about that? You read through all of the police files.
Yeah.
What did you find?
Many, many pages. To back up a little bit, the Department of Justice declined to prosecute Bill Allen for the alleged underage prostitution and also did not allow Deputy Attorney General Rick Svobodny, to prosecute him under the Mann Act, which involves transport. It's going across state lines because he was allegedly flying underage, under the age of consent, under 16 young ladies up to Alaska and paying them for sex. And in March, Senator Murkowski grilled Attorney General Holder on this, and he said there's absolutely no deal, no quid pro quo for Allen's testimony in the corruption trial. And now Senator Murkowski, she's hesitating to say that he perjured himself. But in the wake of this, APD released about 400 pages of its investigation into the alleged underage prostitution that Bill Allen was engaged in. And I did go through every page of that, and there's quite a bit of sordid details. It's all available at KTVA.com. But you know, in there are interviews with the victims who were underage at the time. There's interviews with the victims' families. There's interviews with the managers of the hotels where these liaisons were supposedly taking place, and it presents what's really seems like a solid case. So now Senator Murkowski has sent a letter to the Inspector General and also to the Office of Professional Responsibility demanding to know what the deal is. Again, she's stopping short of accusing Attorney General Holder of perjury for saying that there was no deal cut, but it really doesn't make a lot of sense, especially if you pour through those documents that APD has released, all of those interviews, and especially the ones with the victims. I mean, it's very explicit and corroborated throughout. I mean, they've even got a Hell's Angel in there who's corroborating what the young ladies who were underage at the time are saying.
The Hell's Angel? What does he have to do with the case?
He knew some of the young women that were involved. I assume it was tangential to part of the prostitution element of it.
Okay, so it's tough for the victims, or the alleged victims, because no charges have been brought forward. I heard Robert Hansen is brought up.
Robert Hansen is actually brought up by the Hells Angels, who was aforementioned. He was in prison with Robert Hansen, and there's some sort of odd and, again, tangential things that he says that Robert Hansen told him about other bodies and where to find them. But as far as we can tell, nobody's followed. The police or other law enforcement agencies didn't follow up on that.
And Robert Hansen is, of course, the
Butcher Baker that The Frozen Ground, the film that was just filmed here, was based on.
Right, exactly. So APD says that DOJ told them to stop the investigation.
Yeah, that's my understanding. And like I said, the state did try to say, hey, we'll take care of this ourselves. I don't know, you know, if it was DOJ's overburdened or what, but Deputy Attorney General Svobodny did attempt to say, hey, we'll prosecute him under the Mann Act, because he was flying them up from Seattle to a hotel room up here and using underage, 15 at the time, in the case of one of the young ladies, and they declined. So now APD, I guess, in frustration, has released these documents, and Judge Emmett Sullivan, who presided over the corruption trials, is deciding what parts of the 500-page investigation into the prosecutorial misconduct that just finalized, what parts of that to release to the public, and perhaps we'll find out more when those pages come out.
Now, this isn't the first case for which Attorney General Eric Holder has come under fire. There's that Fast and Furious.
The Fast and Furious, yeah, where the CIA or DEA allegedly provided firearms to Mexican cartels in order to trace them, and then supposedly some, I believe, Border Patrol agents were killed by the same firearms.
One Border Patrol agent.
Yeah.
So, turning now to Congressman Don Young.
Yes.
He was under investigation at the same time that Senator Ted Stevens was indicted. There were no charges brought forth against Congressman Young. But now the House Ethics Committee is investigating him.
The House Ethics Committee is considering whether or not to investigate him. And this time, the question is, were the contributions to his legal defense fund, and this is the legal defense fund for the investigation that concluded with no charges, whether or not there was too much money in there. Congressman Young's office, it's real close to the quote that they gave us. They said, after the hell he's been through over the last 5 years, do you really think that we would overstep any bounds here? They released two letters asking for advice from DOJ, I believe, as far as, perhaps it wasn't DOJ, perhaps it was the FEC, as to whether or not they were staying within the boundaries there. So whether or not there's going to be an investigation is still up in the air, but it is the latest news about investigations into Congressman Young.
Well, Congressman Young has been making waves, shall we say, this week.
The propeller beanie, it started out with that.
I loved the propeller beanie
last week, yeah.
And tell us about the propeller beanie.
The propeller beanie, it was just sort of energy policy diss at President Obama. He had a propeller beanie and a little Obama's energy plan, and he said that the propeller was all that Obama's energy plan was because he didn't have one. It was just Congressman Young's props, which he's sort of infamous for. Everyone remembers the USIC on the House floor, right?
Tim, you remember that. Tell us about that.
I don't remember that, but I remember once when Don Young was walking around with a trap on his hand, where he was illustrating the fact that trapping's okay, that it doesn't hurt the animals, so he walked around with this trap on his hand. Alaskans, it's amazing, Alaskans just eat this stuff up, you know.
He's colorful.
The guy gets away with
it. Yeah, absolutely, and he just had that big explosion with the historian and professor from Rice University, Douglas Brinkley, also an author and historian. Which caused quite a sensation on the internet, not just here in Alaska, but everywhere. And
what was that blow up about?
The blow up was about Anwar.
It
was about drilling in Anwar, and he basically told Brinkley that he didn't know what he was talking about. He addressed him as Dr. Rice, although Brinkley is a professor at Rice University. And Brinkley spoke back to the congressman, which isn't protocol when you're speaking to a committee of the House of Representatives, but basically said, I pay your paycheck, you can't tell me to shut up. It's a good blow up and easily found on the internet.
Now people are going to start Googling it. It was a House Natural Resources Committee.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Tim, what do you think it did to the discussion on Anwar? That little, I guess, sideshow.
It was a little bit of a sideshow. I mean, I think Anwar itself at this point is a sideshow. Personally, I don't think there's any realistic chance. Alaska politicians have to make the effort to periodically review it. And
you can't get elected without saying that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, everybody's got to be for opening Anwar, but realistically, it doesn't have. I mean, it's not worth a lot of people's time, frankly, because unless there's a realistic chance that, you know, the Senate will pass it and the President will sign it, why expend a lot of effort on it? People think it's worth, you know, highlighting that there might be a lot of oil there. But it's worth saying that you know, this stuff of drilling for oil is very risky, and we don't know whether there's oil there.
Right.
Some geologists think there is. Other geologists think it's all gas. So you know, you don't know unless you drill, and that's the issue, really, is should you even be allowed to drill to find out?
Congressman Young says there's nothing there. He said
it's a vast wilderness. In the surface.
Yeah, vast wilderness.
Well, if you do, the part of Anwar that they want to explore is called the coastal plain. It's right right near the coast, and it is very, it's not particularly picturesque. It's very, it's just tundra, just like it is around Prudhoe Bay.
It's not large either. I believe they said it's about the same footprint as Boston Logan International Airport.
Well, it's...
Larger than that?
Yeah, the so-called 1002 area, which is the part of Anwar which was withheld from the, set aside for special study for oil purposes in 1980, is larger. I think it's 1 million acres. It's been so long since I've really seriously thought about Anwar. When they talk about the small footprint, what they're talking about is if you were to drill, you could have a pad and you could drill laterally and you could reach
directional out. Drilling.
Yeah, that sort of thing. And so that the total amount of gravel that would be filled in the area would be about the same as Boston Airport. Mm-hmm. But what isn't said is that these little pieces of gravel would be spread out over a wide area. There would still be roads and pipelines and that sort of thing, mm-hmm. which is the point the environmentalists make, that they are, that's just what they're concerned about, because having a spider work of roads and pipelines and things like that is just what they want to avoid in Anwar. Mm-hmm.
So we're starting to run out of time, and I definitely want to bring into the discussion Congressman Young's proposal for a fund.
Yeah, he came out last week, and in the wake of Warren Buffett and other very wealthy people saying, I should pay more taxes, I'm willing to pay more taxes, the liberal billionaires, Congressman Young proposed in legislation a new website called debtpatriot.gov, where you can go on there and not only donate your own personal wealth, but at certain levels you get certain titles under Congressman Young's proposal. And I believe if an individual contributes $1 billion, and I may get this wrong because there were so many titles, but they're considered a founding mother or father patriot is the title. But if you're like one of us and you donate $10 to debtpatriot.gov, you're a patriot.
Hey, there you go. I'll settle for that. So, Tim, you knew Congressman Young before he was a congressman. And,
yes.
And before he was a Republican.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a story that goes around, and my brother Mike, who was in the legislature and was good friends with Mike, tells this story. So if this is wrong, I can blame it on him. But the story, the lore is that Don Young was once a Democrat, and that he ran in those days for Yukon, was part of the Fairbanks House District. And when Don first wanted to run for the House, the State House, he rubbed the Fairbanks Union people the wrong way, and they controlled the Democratic Party in Fairbanks. And so Don got mad and said, okay, if they want to be that way, if they don't want to support me, I'll become a Republican. And he filed as a Republican and won. And that's how Don Young became a Democrat.
And that's
Don Young became a Republican.
Okay, and that's a story that goes around. We don't know if it's confirmed. So Congressman
I
Young staffers,
true.
Okay, if it's not true, please email us and correct us and let us know.
I'm sure we're going to get some emails, but.
Speaking of emails and the internet, UAA is restricting what students can access online.
So, well, they're restricting the speed, and the students aren't happy about it. BMI and ASCAP, which are the music publishing companies, there's basically the main two in America, actually internationally, but they control the copyright to music, and they're also the ones who go after piracy, internet piracy. I believe the movie MPAA is involved in this as well. But there were some 600, 700, I forget the exact number, complaints to the University of Alaska Anchorage about illegal downloads in the last year, or in 2010, I believe it was. So in response, UAA has restricted the download speeds and is beginning to, I think they've started a little bit already, but they're beginning to, and students are complaining because they say, well, I can't stream my Netflix, I can't stream my Hulu, I can't play World of Warcraft or other, internet.
They should be studying instead.
They probably should be, but they're college students. They should be doing a lot of other things non-college related also instead. Get out in front of the computer and do the things college kids should do. But there's definitely been an outcry from the students and articles in the UAA newspaper, the Northern Light, saying this is completely screwing us up. And one solution that UAF has is they restrict one particular. It's a bit software. It's not a website. It's called BitTorrents, and it's a way to pirate music and movies. They've restricted that only to 2 megabytes per second, which is what UAA is restricting the entire internet download flow to, is 2 megabytes per second, which is pretty slow download connection if you ever like look at what the speed of what you're downloading when you're downloading something. So that might be a compromise that can be reached if the students get loud enough.
Okay, well, students, they say that the many are being punished by the for the actions of a few.
Yeah.
So we'll see. It's not the end of the story. But well, thank you both so much for joining us. Tim Bradner with Alaska Journal of Commerce and Brendan Joel Kelly Helenthal, you've got a long name now,
yes,
with KTVA CBS 11 News. And you have watched Alaska Edition. We will be back next week with Michael Carey. Thank you so much.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskaedition@alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.